Hello and welcome back to the show. Today we're joined by Dr. Preeti Kulkarni to talk all about the gut-skin connection. We'll be covering all the difficult topics like eczema, acne, psoriasis, rosacea, and hives, and we'll get to the bottom of why these conditions really occur. If you've ever had any skin issues or know someone who does, you don't want to miss this episode. Let's get into it. Dr. Preeti, it's wonderful to have you today to dive into the topic of the gut-skin connection. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me here.
Well, we're excited because we get so many questions from our community about things like acne, psoriasis, eczema, random rashes and hives, and we would love to glean some answers for our lovely people. So thanks for sharing your wisdom with us today. To get started, can we just talk about how you became a naturopath and what got you into gut health and the gut-skin conversation?
It's a question I get asked a lot, so I'm happy to answer that. And it's one of my favorite topics to talk about too. So, you know, with naturopathic medicine, it was just like a confluence of different things that came together that pushed me towards the field. In my undergrad years, I've always loved biology, and that was my major. And I came across medical anthropology. That was just like mind-opening to me. It was looking at ethnic diets and cultural practices and how that affects people's health. I really loved all of that information, and I ended up adding it as my second major. And as I was getting ready and prepped to apply to medical school, because that was always my thing, I loved human biology. To this day, it fascinates me how the human body works. And I was doing all of that, and my mom went through some major health crisis in those years. And it took, it started with something like a minor rash, and it went on to become full-blown rosacea, but it wasn't diagnosed that way at first. We went from, you know, dermatologist to dermatologist. We went to immunologists, we went to allergists, and all the answers that we could get was different steroids and different prescriptions, or try this or try that. All her tests were normal, so that she didn't really have any answers. And that's kind of what really got me thinking. It was our entire family going through that. It's like, why can't anybody tell us why this is happening or what's actually going on? The irony was that my mom and her family was known to be the one with perfect green skin. So when this was happening, you know, it was really rough on her too. Just even the social aspect of it was really rough. That's when we came across this awesome doctor. He was a conventional doctor, but he's the one who, you know, sat down and longer than the usual visit that doctors typically have. So he took about 20 minutes. At that time, that was longer than any doctor who had seen her. Every doctor had seen her for maybe max of 5 and just prescribed something new. So he actually sat down, asked her what was going on, and she told him everything that had happened in the last 4 months. He gave one more prescription, but this time it was not a steroid. It was not one of those things that'll just take care of the symptoms. He said, you need antibiotics. There's something going on in your gut, and I don't know what that is, and we don't have time to test it. Just go ahead and take these and come back in 14 days. And in 14 days, she was, you know, her skin was almost 70% better. And she had suffered for 3 to 4 months by that time. So we went back, and at that time I was with her, and he said, okay, this looks good. Now you don't need to do anything. Just make sure, you know, you're not eating too many fermented foods. So they were very vague directions about her diet, but they were still okay. Her main problem was that she was a vegetarian, so she couldn't eat meat. And he said, okay, don't worry about the protein. You know, just make sure you don't eat processed foods, which was easy for her to do. And she did recover. But that time, you know, that kind of planted a seed in my mind as to like, okay, why did none of the other doctors, she had, and not kidding, she'd seen about 10 doctors prior to this person, said, why did nobody ask her about, you know, what was happening in her life? And she was going through a lot of stress at the time. And nobody questioned what was going on in her gut. And not even one person had thought about antibiotics at that time. So that's when I started doing some research. I asked him a couple of questions, and he said, you know, this is something new. Look into the field of naturopathic medicine. Look into the field of functional medicine. See if it interests you. Because he knew I was planning on applying for medical school. So I said, okay. And that's kind of when it took off. When I found out about naturopathic medicine, it was just like, okay, this is exactly what I had been thinking of. You know, the biological sciences combined with that medical anthropology background, it was like what I wanted to do. So it just turned out to be aha this is what I really want to do going forward. But yes, it was definitely a mix of everything that was happening at the time. And it's an awesome field. And again, like I said, I love the fact that we get to look at the whole picture. And it's not just about if you have a symptom, let's treat it, let's suppress it. No, it's about giving relief, but at the same time, making sure you don't get those symptoms back again if we can possibly control it.
What a cool origin story. Thanks for sharing, Dr. Preeti. I would love to dive a little bit more into the gut and the skin connection. Obviously, you experienced this firsthand with your family. What is actually happening? Why is the skin and the gut so interconnected?
There's a deeper answer to this, of course, and I can talk for hours, but to summarize, the main thing we need to look at is what the skin really is, right? So the skin is actually an organ. It's one of the organs of our body. It's widespread, so it's spread out. We don't typically think of it as an organ. Like when you see anatomical pictures, you often think of like the digestive system, or you think of like organs like the stomach, something that you can hold. With the skin, you can't hold it. It's kind of covering you. It's covering the whole person. But it is actually an organ, and it has very specific functions. And one of its main functions is to act as a barrier to the external world. Another function is to excrete toxins through our sweat, and to maintain electrolyte balance, and also to make sure that it thermoregulates. So when it's too cold, it tries to warm up. If it's too hot, then it'll try to cool you down with sweating. So it does have these functions it has to maintain. Whenever there is an organ in the body, the most basic requirement for that organ to function normally is a steady flow of nutrients. And if you don't get that steady flow of nutrients, you are either going to see damage happening to the organ or a suboptimal functioning. And that's the same thing with the skin. When the steady flow of nutrients is interrupted, which is what happens when your gut is affected, you will see some kind of changes in the skin and in the skin functions. Now, to give you two main examples, one, in order to keep the barrier function going, our skin needs to have healthy sebum production levels. So sebum is actually like an oily substance that our skin pores produce, so that it can create this thin layer on top of our skin, and that prevents typically bacteria, viruses, anything entering, and even certain toxins from getting into the body. And if we have too much sebum or too little sebum, that's a problem. And in order to maintain those healthy levels, we need to look back at the gut. The gut, there are two main functions. One, it needs to have enough fat absorption for the sebum levels to be healthy and for sebum production to be in a healthy level. At the same time, we now know, looking at studies, that sebum production is affected by what we call androgens. So these are actually one of our steroid hormones, and androgens are broken down into, they're basically digested. Excess androgens from our body that we don't need are broken down and eliminated through the stool. And that's done by our friendly bacteria, which is our gut bacteria. And when these bacteria are not in balance, they tend to don't break down the androgens. And if you have higher androgens, it leads to higher levels of sebum production. And that can disrupt, again, the barrier function. So that's one very close link related to the barrier function. The second one, which is sweat production. Typically, when we have any stimulus coming from the outside, we tend to react, right? The body will react to it. And that's what happens, say, when you're exercising, your body's building up heat. In order to cool you down, the body will produce sweat. And a certain amount of sweat is necessary to make sure that, you know, you eliminate certain toxins and also keep your electrolyte balance. When you're not absorbing enough nutrients or not getting electrolytes from your foods and the water and the foods that you're eating and even electrolyte drinks that you're drinking, you already are deficient in your electrolytes. And when you start sweating, you're losing more electrolytes. And that is not something that the skin can automatically regulate, but it's coming because of what's happening in your gut. So you can see both those functions are affected, and they're closely linked to what's happening in the gut. And of course, there's the whole area which, it's still being studied, which is estrogen balance. The microbiome in the gut affects your estrogen balance and the androgen balance, like we talked about. And that affects the way that your skin behaves with regards to how taut it remains, especially for women. Estrogen is a key thing. As women get older, they lose a lot of estrogen and they end up seeing their skin thinning out. And that's partly because of the amount of estrogen that's running through the fat under the skin. So it's actually, there's so many different ways that the skin is related to the gut. And the most simple way to look at it, I always say, is think about what it is. Think of your skin as an organ and what it is that your skin is not getting through your gut.
So, such a cool perspective. Yeah, I love the details.
I think, like, you think, obviously, skin is such a massive industry just in general in terms of beauty and obviously treating different things like acne. You think it's a very sort of like surface down approach. It's like, I need to apply something to my skin. But I love how you're explaining things that actually starts from the inside within our guts first, which is, I think, a super cool concept for someone to understand. So for something specific like acne, it's obviously a huge problem in our particularly Western populations. Why is that? Is there a diet connection?
Absolutely. And Matt, there are so many studies now that actually document this. We have seen that certain Western, you know, the Western or the SAD diet that we call the standard American diet, unfortunately tends to be, you know, it's an underlying factor for a lot of chronic conditions, including skin conditions like acne. And one of the factors that one of the components of the SAD diet is that it is really high in carbs, in refined carbs, typically very high in processed foods and also high in high fatty foods like dairy. So all three of those factors have now been linked to specifically to acne, but some of the other skin conditions as well. And we find that there are actually even epidemiological studies. There was a study done, I think it was a Swedish researcher who went into like the forest of Papua New Guinea, and he looked at the indigenous population there. And he was just shocked to find that not even one person had acne. And he's like, how is that? And because their diet is all based on, you know, it's heavily fiber-based. So they eat tubers growing in the ground, lots of fruits and vegetables, and of course, supplemented by a little bit of meat from the hunting. But there is basically zero processed food, very minimal dairy, and literally no high fat or high sugar or even high salt in their diet. And that's something that made him think. And he came back, and then, of course, he's done studies on teenagers to find out what their diet looks like. And so we find that when it's teenagers, because teenagers have a really high prevalence of acne, but in general, in populations, a very new study in June of 2020, so this year in France that was done, found that they can actually see in the population, they had the population follow through like for an year, and patients who ate a certain amount of carbohydrates beyond a certain cutoff, carbohydrates, sugars, fats, those were the ones that tended to have the highest amount of or highest occurrence of acne. And on the other side, anybody who ate lower than those levels of carbohydrates and whoever had the lowest intake of sugary foods, they tended to have the least occurrence of acne. So there is a major link. And again, we can see, we can kind of drive that back to the gut, because what happens when you eat a lot of refined carbohydrates is that you're raising your insulin levels. You're basically not getting any nutrients in, but you're just getting your blood glucose levels higher. At the same time, when you're eating high salt food, it disrupts your electrolyte imbalance. That creates other issues. At the same time, when you're eating things like dairy, dairy typically has a certain amount of hormones. Even if you're in a, you know, you'll see these labels on milk cartons that says produced from milk with that from cows that are not treated with antibiotics. That's a different part of it. But every single milk carton that you pick up will have traces of estrogen, because the milk is derived from lactating cows, and lactating cows have to have high levels of estrogen to produce milk. So even small amounts of estrogens, as they come in through your body, they can disrupt your normal hormonal balance. And as we talked about earlier, that again leads back to the gut. If your normal hormonal balance is affected, that can directly translate to changes in your skin and can lead to things like that. So acne and diet, for a long time now, we've seen there's a very tight link. And within a period of about 6 to 8 weeks, we've seen patients, you know, the first thing we can do is stop the eruption of new acne if we are able to change their diet significantly.
Mm, awesome answer. Thank you. So with your mom, did you say that it was acne? Was that the skin issue she was having?
No, she was actually having rosacea.
Rosacea, that's right. Okay.
So in retrospect, I think we had, so she was diagnosed with rosacea, but in retrospect now, I think she had SIBO.
Yeah, right. That was going to be my next question. So now, as a trained physician, with years under your belt and looking into all these skin issues and the gut connection, what do you do now as a practitioner see as her issue, and how would you treat it now?
So with her case too, like I've you know, repeated in my mind over the years again, it's like, okay, what could have done, you know, what could they have done differently? And now I know I try to implement that in my practice. So some factors, just taking her case as an example, she was a new immigrant to the country. She was, it was barely 8 months since she's been in the country. So her food had drastically changed. Her diet had drastically changed. She was going through perimenopause. And at the same time, there was a whole new social aspect of interaction. So there was a lot of stress, like just kind of adjusting to the whole new environment. And that kind of, you know, is another aspect to look at as a human being. When your environment changes, even the normal microflora in your gut is changing, right? Because our microflora also responds to what we're eating, but it also responds to the germs around you or just the bacteria and the viruses around you. It will respond to kind of adjust to a point where you get to an equilibrium. So all of these changes were happening, and we still don't know the exact trigger, but something changed at that time. All of these things added together may have caused some sort of an imbalance that triggered changes in the gut flora that can trigger changes in your skin, make it thinner, make it at the same time with rosacea, because you have increased blood flow to the skin. And you also she actually had bleeding rosacea. So, you know, she had to the point where the capillaries were bursting. This kind of goes back to not getting enough nutrients to rebuild that collagen, to rebuild with the vitamin C, to have enough elastic skin to keep the capillaries under control, you know, from bleeding. All of that was happening. But with one course of antibiotics, 14 days later, you know, the bleeding had stopped. So it had gotten to the point where the skin was already responding. And then, it took some time before the skin went back to completely normal. But just the fact that hitting the right thing, like just finding out the right cause, and that itself, like, helped the body a lot. And that's what I tell my patients is when you have an infection in your gut, whether it's full blown like SIBO, or if it's just kind of an imbalance or dysbiosis, if you treat it, you will start seeing a response within 2 weeks' time. And after that, doesn't mean you go back to what you were doing, because that just means you've given the body enough help to be able to go into the right direction. You need to keep going. You need to keep your diet a certain way. You need to keep your hydration levels up. You need to take care of other things too. Again, looking at the whole picture, you do need to have stress management techniques that will help you, that will help your cortisol levels stay normal, your inflammation levels stay normal. All of that is going to help you heal your skin further down. And that's true for all the rosacea patients too. And as you know, rosacea is very common in perimenopause and menopausal women. Again, because the skin is changing, the skin is thinning out, it's not the same as before. So it is more prone to having, you know, capillary kind of bursts. At the same time, if your gut flora is also affected, you almost have like a double whammy. So making sure that your gut stays healthy, you'll have less chances of getting things like rosacea. You're also less sensitive to the sun, because you'll have all your nutrients that you need that will help you produce enough melanin to keep your skin safe from the UV radiation too.
Great, thank you. And I think for the viewers listening, would you be able to share a little bit about antibiotics? Because I think for those who maybe aren't aware of how they work, I'm a bit nervous that someone might be listening going, oh, I have skin issues. How about I just take some antibiotics? Could you share the caveats with that?
That's so true. You know, I definitely don't want people to think that all their skin issues can be cured by taking antibiotics. That's just one case, right? And that's what that's why it's important, as we always say in naturopathic medicine, to look at the whole case. It may not be that you have an infection. It just may be that you have an imbalance. What that means is, and this is the way, kind of a simple way that I explain to patients, we have our microbiome, which is kind of our mix of bacteria, some viruses, and there are even some fungi in there. And they kind of run on a spectrum. It's like least helpful to most helpful. And you always kind of want them all, you want your more helpful ones to be in a higher level than the less helpful ones. And anytime that there is stress, anytime there is an infection, or if you're eating a really bad diet, like you're somebody who doesn't eat any fruits and vegetables, very much through like a drive-through, one of my patients calls it the window diet, like a, you know, drive-through type of diet, you're going to have this really bad imbalance where the least helpful strains are kind of multiplying rapidly, whereas your, you know, more favorable strains are, you know, they're crowding them out. So that imbalance may not require a full-blown antibiotic treatment. It may also not be full-blown SIBO. And at that time, what you might need is just dietary changes that are going to feed your favorable strains, That's where the fiber comes in. But you also need to work with a trained professional to maybe see if you need some herbal support, some you know, mild antimicrobials that can help you shift that balance a little bit faster. You can do things with diet. Sometimes it might take a little bit longer because the body has to respond. And it also depends on what else is happening, right? If you have a person who's super stressed, for example, I have some patients who are nurses or even other patients who do shift duties. So they have basically no option of having a regular schedule. Some days they work, you know, they work through the days, and on other days they work at nights. That creates a lot of internal stress for the body. And that leads us to another whole aspect of inflammation. So our microbiome is also responsible for keeping our inflammation levels under control, because we have seen that certain strains help us produce more pro-inflammatory cytokines, meaning everything that leads to pain or infection and inflammation, all of that's going to be favored, versus there are other strains that are more anti-inflammatory, or they help the immune system move towards an anti-inflammatory system. And we want that balance to be back. If somebody has an irregular schedule, they're already prone to inflammation. On top of that, if you add a microbiome that's favoring inflammation, now you've added more work for the body to do to calm down inflammation. And cortisol, which is our stress hormone, is also our anti-inflammatory hormone. And now you've increased the demand, you know, really highly for cortisol. At the same time, if you're not feeding the body what it needs to create more cortisol, and you have other underlying imbalances that are already present, you might have somebody who smokes, for example, or, you know, who's just has a very bad lifestyle. All those things will add up the demand for cortisol. When you're creating a high demand and not giving enough supply of nutrients, you're going to see that as inflammation somewhere in the body. And that can end up on your skin. So it may not just be an infection. It could actually be lifestyle factors that are adding up, and lifestyle factors that are leading to what we call a functional nutrient deficiency that's causing your skin symptoms. So definitely it's important to look at the whole picture. Antibiotics are not always the answer. So hopefully that, informs people that they shouldn't just jump to antibiotics. There could be other reasons that they're having skin issues too.
Thank you.
Excellent. Well, I'm loving how you can synthesize all this information. It's really impressive. So, but we have a special request from a listener who would like to know about their hives. And so we thought, what better person to ask?
You know, hives is something that's always been an interesting topic for me, because we do have a lot of patients, ranging in different age groups, starting from the age of 6 to, I have my latest hives person is 55. So a big range of age groups and coming in with just unknown hives. And typically they have the diagnosis of idiopathic urticaria, which just means that we don't know what's causing it, but it's there. It's a rash that's coming out of nowhere. And I always tell my patients, your body is very smart, and we do believe in the wisdom of the wisdom of healing from our body. So if your body's showing some signs that there is something going on, it's just asking for help. It just means that things are not balanced internally. We need to figure out what's going on. And of course, you know, the gut is the first place to look, because that's where all your fuel is coming in from. And it's a very simple concept. I always tell them, you know, what would happen if you put diesel in a normal car? The car is not going to run very far. It's the same idea with your body. If you're putting in the wrong kind of fuel, you're not going to go very far. Or maybe you're eating the right kind of foods, but it's actually not getting digested and the nutrients are not getting assimilated. You're still going to see symptoms. So we need to start with that aspect. And also, you know, I always tell my patients, first thing to rule out is any external, type of insults too. That's not something that you want to just ignore. Like, for example, just a very recent case, a patient called in and said, I'm getting these hives all over my body, haven't changed anything. Talked a little bit more and figured out that his wife had changed their detergent recently. Same brand, just a different kind. And that's a possibility, because sometimes it could just be an external factor. And the moment you stop applying that particular irritating agent to the body, you should be able to, you see a kind of, you know, a subs, you should see your symptoms subside in the case of hives. So externally, if there's nothing that's changed and you continue to get these hives kind of randomly, then it's something that you have to look at internally. So that's when we first start off with looking for hidden infections. And there's quite a lot of data. If you look into the research, there are some certain infections that have been linked to having, you know, these hidden, or they're called hidden infections. They've been linked to having rashes on the body. And it's actually documented that something like Helicobacter pylori, which is a bacterial infection of your stomach lining, can, you know, once it's treated, your hives can subside. Urticaria has been linked to that. There is a protozoan called Mastocystis hominis. It's not very common, but if it is present and you are getting hives, once the blastocystis is treated, you often see a remission in the hives as well. So there is, you know, and there are, of course, other parasites that they've seen linked to hives as well. And the way that you look at it is if there is an infection, the infection directly may not be causing the hives, but what it's doing is it's creating a severe imbalance in your immune system. Because again, a major part of your immune system is linked to the gut and to the microbiome. And when there is that major kind of disturbance, you're seeing it being translated into hives that happen at, you know, sometimes it feels, sometimes patients tell me, I didn't even eat anything different or I didn't do anything different, because, you know, that's the first thing we ask, like, what did you change? Is there been any change in your food, your lifestyle, anything you apply on your skin? And if all those answers are no, then you definitely want to look at, okay, if it's just happening randomly, then we need to figure out what's happening inside that's causing this trigger. So that hopefully this person can talk with their doctor and investigate. I would highly recommend checking what's going on in the gut, with both with regards to hidden infections, but also with regards to just dysbiosis, which is, again, having just a major imbalance in the microbiome.
Great. Thank you. I feel like we're just using you like an encyclopedia today. We're like, what about this? What about that? But next on the list is psoriasis. What's going on there and what do you look for in your patients?
With psoriasis, as you know, it's an autoimmune condition. So again, we come back, you know, there's so much repetition in this too, right? There is, it's an autoimmune condition. So we're going back to the immune system. And with psoriasis, one of the main things I tell my patients is that the problem with psoriasis is you do have to treat it systemically first. It's unlike some of the other skin conditions where we often say we need to treat them both at the same time, locally and systemically. With psoriasis, you have to start internally because the immune system is what's actually rattled. That's where we need to begin with. And when we talk about autoimmunity, we always talk about something called the leaky gut syndrome, right? So leaky gut has been linked to a lot of autoimmune diseases, including psoriasis. And with leaky gut, what we want to make sure is that the first question you ask is, do you have a leaky gut? And what that means is that your gut permeability, so typically our gut is meant to only, and your listeners might be familiar with this already, but you know, our gut has a very strong policing system for what gets in from the lumen of the gut into the bloodstream. When that policing system fails, and it's a pretty heavy duty policing system, it's not the simplistic one. We can think of layers and layers of barbed wire, but when all of those layers fail, that's when you end up having a toxin getting into your bloodstream. And when that repeatedly happens, that's when you end up seeing, you know, your immune system is just on hyper alert. It's almost like your entire immune system says, okay, there's something foreign, we need to get at it now. And the problem with that is that even after, so that doesn't stop, like the immune response never stops. And during that time, you end up seeing the immune system attacking your own cells. And one of the cells could be your skin cells, which happens to be, that's what happens in psoriasis. With psoriasis, you want to figure out if you have a leaky gut, which you most likely do. And once you have a leaky gut, of course, the next question is, why do you have a leaky gut? And then we go back to our checklist of whether it could be offending foods. It could be common offending foods like gluten or dairy or soy for some people, or sometimes it's uncommon foods. And I've seen that in practice where, you know, we often see patients, I've had patients who react to peanuts. I've had patients who react to avocados, which was very surprising the first time it happened in our practice. And the patient said, that's what I eat day in and day out. Maybe that's the problem. And we did eliminate them for a while, and she's doing better. So sometimes it can be, you know, a food that you normally think is healthy, but maybe not for you because your body can't digest it very well. So offending foods is the first thing to check because they can create inflammation. They can affect those layers of, you know, that layer of protection that you have and cause a leaky gut. At the same time, again, there's bacterial imbalances. When you have that bacterial imbalance, it's very likely that those systems that are in check can fail, because the bacteria are involved in signaling, in immune signaling, and telling your body what's foreign and what's not. And when you don't have the right side, right kind of bacteria, or the bacteria that you have are not doing their function, they're just kind of saying, oh, I'm not getting fed, so I might as well not work. That's kind of an easy way to look at it. But when you have lower levels of those helpful bacteria, you will end up getting a leaky gut. And of course, when you have an infection, that and the infection that's chronic, so something that's been there, gone undetected for a while, that's when you tend to have, these are all kind of predisposing factors for somebody who ends up getting a leaky gut. Now, why the, for a leaky gut, when somebody has a leaky gut, and why for some people it causes psoriasis, whereas for others it might cause Hashimoto's, or it, for others it might cause vitiligo, which we have some patients with, we don't know that yet. We don't know the answer as to why the conditions manifest differently. But we do know that with psoriasis being an autoimmune condition, you start with the gut first and definitely treat the leaky gut.
Fantastic. Thank you. And for our listeners out there, I'm sure they've tuned in to learn about eczema. It's so common. What stones do you turn when you're looking at eczema?
So eczema, again, you know, wide range of age group that comes in with things like eczema. It's slightly different when we're looking at children versus adults. Typically with children, when we have children with eczema, one of the reasons it's different, the treatment is slightly different, is because with kids, the skin is still developing. So there are different layers of the skin are still kind of adjusting to the fact as to what's normal for them. And then when they hit puberty, of course, normal changes. And then post-puberty, things are, the normal is different. So with children with eczema, more often than not, it is food triggered. And that's something that we always start with. So you have to start with an elimination diet, or start with a food sensitivity test, where you can see if there are certain foods that cause increased inflammation in the gut, and that can translate to increased inflammation on your skin. Either directly, sometimes it, and there are three different immune pathways by which this can happen, but the most common one that we see with children is that it's it could be a pure allergy, which is they eat a food and the eczema flares up. The secondary, which can be delayed hypersensitivity, is they eat a food, can't digest it, and that therefore there is an immune response, and then you see a flare-up. And then the third kind, which is silent or cumulative, is what I say. If they eat a particular food on a regular basis, that's when it tends to cause a problem. It doesn't happen every time they eat the food, but if they continue to eat that food, for some reason, the body is not able to digest large amounts of that food. And this is very common with dairy and children. So with lactose intolerance, this is a common factor that we see. So trying to identify foods is the first thing, the foods that they can digest or they're sensitive to. At the same time, the second part is giving them local support. So with children, it's really important that we help them with localized support. Also because their skin is still developing, it's easier for them to get infections like staph on their skin, because the barrier function is not completely developed yet. And that's where we want to. So that's where, you know, for children, there are some exceptions we make. And this is why we call it more integrative approach, because it's okay to use something like Vaseline, where you would, you know, actually put a barrier on the skin. So it actually helps to prevent anything from getting inside while the skin is healing. So it is important to treat internally, but while we're doing everything that's happening from the inside, it's important to make sure that you protect the skin from further damage. And that's what we would do for children. Same thing for adults, that applies to adults too. But at the same time, for adults, like we said before, the barrier function is already established. So they're kind of going backwards. They've had a good barrier function. And now if it's new triggered eczema, the first thing to ask is what's changed? What's changed that barrier function? A lot of times for adults, it could be new cosmetic products, a new soap that they've started using. So anything that is actually touching the skin, that's changed, because that can change the way that your sebum behaves, that can change the texture of your skin, and things can get in much easier. You could absorb toxins to your skin. So it could be a localized reaction versus a systemic reaction. And that's kind of the distinction we make in eczema too, is whether the reaction is happening in a specific area only. Often people will find that eczema is increases, like where you sweat more. And that's something that you see that with children a lot, and you see like the skin is thickening just as a response to what's happening and the itching and all of that. So eventually we wanted to, of course, we want to stop the itch, but we also want to be able to heal that skin so so that the barrier function remains, and internally they're not getting that chronic itch. You know, it's like they're not getting that stimulus to itch over and over again. With most adults, we find that eczema is localized and often happens after a major life event, either a major stressful event, again, like I said, a major change in the environment. It could be a positive change, like a change in cosmetics, or it could be a negative change, like they started working in a different place and now they're exposed to certain chemicals that they weren't before. It could also be changes in the environment, like when often I ask people, has there been a change in life in terms of, did you move from a different city, or did you, you know, change to even move houses or homes? Because having a new home can, you know, determine what's happening. In the Bay Area here, we have a lot of old homes and some of them have a lot of mold. And most people don't find out until they end up getting a chronic health issue. And then when they investigate more, they end up finding mold in the roof or under their bathroom floors. So something like that, like an environmental trigger, can be a possibility for adults too. So slight different treatment, but you still want to make sure that their gut is in good shape, because no matter what your body needs, you're a steady supply of nutrients. So to heal from the eczema, you are going to need that steady supply.
Excellent. Great. And now, putting it all together, do you have a particular patient story where someone had, you know, you addressed their gut issues and they had dramatic, you know, sort of an impact on their skin?
I have so many. Who do I pick? Because we have so many good cases. We have one who's on our website. We have she authorized us. You know, thankful to her. She gave us permission to put her pictures on our website. And this is an adult onset case of something called dyshidrotic eczema. And you could see on her hands when she first came in, they were peeling, and it was bleeding in the little grooves in her hands. And a lot of times when dyshidrotic eczema hits, it's known that it's because of stress. So stress is considered a major trigger, and it only occurs in your hands and feet. And for some patients, when it gets really severe, it can progress to other parts of your body. But, you know, when you have bleeding hands, it can be very traumatic. One, because she was an artist. Two, also because it's, you know, you use your hands for typing, writing. She had kids and a pet, and she had to take care of everyone at home. She couldn't cook. So it was quite debilitating. And it just came on almost like a sudden onset. Within a week or so, things just started to go in the wrong direction. So, you know, as most patients do, she went into her primary doctor, was given a lotion to put on, a hydrocortisone. That didn't seem to help. It made it a little worse. So she was questioning, like, what else could we do? And during that time frame, what was happening is, because the skin was getting so thin, she ended up getting a bacterial infection in her hands. So she had to go through an antibiotic course, use a topical antibiotic, went through all of that, was okay for about a week, and then it hits again. So that's when, you know, she walked into our office saying, okay, do we have any other alternative ways of looking at this? So we went through, I said, yes, you know, if it's coming back, that means there's something going on inside. Again, looking at it, not just skin deep, but inside out. So we did a stool test on her. And we did find that she had two infections in her gut. One was the H. pylori, and then she had another minor parasite. And they said, let's go ahead and treat these first. Meanwhile, you know, use whatever you need to. We did give her some topicals to make sure that her hands don't continue to deteriorate. We did do, you know, a little bit of local treatment with coconut oil, some tea tree oil too. So when you mix tea tree oil with coconut oil, the tea tree oil gives you a little bit of added microbial effect and also prevents fungus from growing in your in the cracks of her hands. So we were doing all of that locally. We were also doing a lot of soothing treatments with calendula, all of that. After we treated her two infections, the hands stopped peeling. That was the first change. There was more cracking. So the cracks started to heal and her hands stopped peeling. Then we added more supportive nutrition like fish oils, and then a little bit more to help her skin grow back. So there's a hair, skin, and nail formula to help kind of, you know, it's kind of added nutrients. Now your gut is absorbing its normal nutrients, but you're just giving it an added push. So specific to the skin, all of that And this was over a span of about 6 months. By the end of 6 months, her hands were healed. So she was really thankful, which was great. And we were happy to see her progress. And she was dot on with her dietary check. She was one of those people who they said, okay, you do need to take away these inflammatory foods because they could be a problem. And interestingly enough, in dyshidrotic eczema, one of the things that has been linked to it is cobalt. So cobalt-rich foods, which includes things like dairy, shellfish, even certain nuts, they can flare up dyshidrotic eczema. So we had to eliminate cobalt-rich foods from her diet. So she was like spot on. She's like, I will not deviate from this no matter what. And she didn't. And even when she did slightly by accident, she could tell. She said, okay, I knew we ate outside. Something was off and I can tell my arms are responding, my hands are responding to that. So after about 6 months, her hands were good and touch wood, she's continuing to do well. So no issues. And during this time frame, we did a lot of mind-body work with her too, because like I said, typically with dyshidrotic eczema, it starts with a major, you know, stressor. And I kept asking what happened, like what was the major stress? She said there was a lot of different stress. She wanted to start her own business. There was a lot of other things happening. But it also helped her kind of, you know, she's somebody, she said she became very spiritual at the time because she wasn't healing. So then we gave her some exercises, just some mind-body exercises to help her calm down her mind, because that helps with your adrenals. And your adrenals are the one, again, producing your cortisol, which is your natural anti-inflammatory hormone. And as your cortisol levels rise, your normal, your inflammation goes down. So along with her gut, we were also treating her adrenals, and that seemed to kind of come through at the point. And now she feels like she knows when she's under stress, she makes sure that she does her meditations. She makes sure that she's taking care of her gut, and she goes back to her 100%, no gluten, no dairy. And then as things get better, she's able to have a little bit of wiggle room, but not when she's under a flare-up. So that was one of her great stories from last year, but we have, which is great. I'm glad patients like it when they see, you know, and one thing I've learned over the years is because it's your skin, it's such a devastating thing for somebody to have their skin on their, especially on their face or hands, being affected, because that's the first thing that other people see, right? And that's like you can, and I remember this patient and I had another teenager who said, it affects me because I know when my friends are looking at me, they're looking at my acne or they're looking at my eczema, they're not looking at me. So it just becomes such a big, it's a mental emotional impact too. It affects their confidence, it affects their social well-being, and they start to become withdrawn. So it's not just the skin, but it's affecting your entire personality when you get something like that. So it's really great that we can change that. And of course, you know, gut, changing your gut changes everything. So it makes you happier, it can change your moods, it can make you feel more energized. So you're not just treating the skin, but you're treating the overall person too.
Wonderful. What a great call. We've enjoyed this so much, Dr. Preeti. I feel like I just could keep asking you questions, but I think that's a beautiful place to land the call, what you just said and with that story. So thank you so much. If someone would like to get in touch with you or keep connected to your resources and whatever work you're putting out, where's the best place for someone to go?
Yes, you can definitely find me on our website, which is our coreintegrative.com. And on our website, you can find links to our social media channels. I try to post healthy food recipes and even just blogs from time to time. And when they go to our website, they can even sign up for our newsletter. And through our newsletter, we often send out, you know, just tips for, you know, things that you could do for your skin or just for exercise, something that you can incorporate, something practical. That's kind of what our goal is, to help people implement these things without having to make it into a big deal. It's like, okay, this is a healthy habit that I can, you know, constantly, like instantly incorporate into my habits. So that's something I would love to share with everyone. And I really do appreciate you having me here, because I know you said you can ask questions, but I can talk on this all day too. So you do have to stop somewhere.
Thank you so much. I think for everyone watching with skin issues, I know they, if I were them, I would feel really encouraged right now. Even for me, I know that my skin hasn't been a big issue for me, but I noticed when I got off dairy and gluten, a happy side effect is that my skin really cleared up and no more weird little bumps and all this sort of stuff. So even simple, small, simple changes can make a big difference. So thank you so much, Dr. Preeti, for joining us today. We've loved it. And for everyone at home, we'll see you in the next episode.
Thank you, Sarah. Thank you, Matt.